Good evening and welcome to the Monday, November 17th meeting of the Curry Beach Town Council. At this time, I'd like to call the meeting to order. Call Commissioner Ellen for our invocation and then the Pledge of Allegiance.
Please join me in prayer. Lord God, you are the builder of all good things. May our leaders work together harmoniously and not get sidetracked by partisan politics. Help these leaders and help us not to be divided, but to commit to working cooperatively for the common good. Give our leaders and us humility and respect for one another. When our leaders have different opinions and agendas, help them find common ground and find ways to compromise. Help these leaders to be mutually supportive of one another and the members of this great town. Amen.
Amen. Please stand for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is the approval of the consent agenda items. Any questions or comments about those? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Make a motion to approve as presented.
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. No one opposed. Motion passes. Adoption of the agenda. I have nothing to add to the agenda for tonight. I don't have anything, so entertain a motion to adopt the agenda.
Make a motion to approve as presented.
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Next is a public comment. Mandy, do we have anybody signed up?
We do not.
Okay. All right. So we'll move right along to presentations. First is Bernard Robinson and Company. Victor, you're up with our audit.
How you doing?
Fine, sir. How are you?
Doing well. Put a little presentation here for you. As part of the audit, one of the things that the Local Government Commission, which oversees the government auditing in North Carolina, requires both the town and the auditors to complete is a financial assessment. And it's a little spreadsheet that we enter the information in and we submit it to the Local Government Commission. And the thing that I want to point out to you is, as part of that, is that there's some financial ratios, and we'll go over a few of them. If there's, you know, they kind of look at it and kind of compare you to other similar municipalities in North Carolina. But also, if there was, you know, if there was any internal control issues or anything like that identified in the audit, we're required by professional standards as well as the state laws in North Carolina to kind of report to you about that. You know, and if there were any issues identified as part of this process, the town council would have to respond about how you're going to fix things like that. And so just kind of point that out to you as we kind of go through this. Just to kind of let you know, the audit opinion on the audit that you look at is considered a modified opinion. That's the cleanest opinion that you can receive. That means nothing came to our attention that led us to believe that the amounts or the disclosures were not in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. And that's the same opinion that you received as long as we've been working with you. Also, just to let you know that there were no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses or any kind of like management letters that were identified in during our audit related to the design or the operations of the town's controls that we need to bring to you. So again, kind of earlier, there was nothing there related to any kind of internal controls that you need to worry about responding to the Local Government Commission. One of the things, you know, as in the important thing is your fund balance, the fund balance availability. And, you know, this is an important reserve, kind of talking about, because this is how you balance your budget if your expenditures exceed your projected revenues and stuff. And it also looks at, you know, it kind of looks at how you are, your fund balance as a comparison of your kind of annual budget of your expenditures and stuff. And, you know, so that's a very important performance indicator for most of the municipalities in North Carolina. And as you can see, the right here, looking at the towns, for towns between $1 million and basically $10 million of general fund expenditures, that you're kind of looking at the state would like you to have about 34%. And, you know, most of the similar municipalities that you're grouped in with have about 63%. And, you know, the 34% kind of translates into about 4 months worth of available expenditures or money to cover expenditures. But for 2025, you look at the town almost had about 75%. And, you know, if you compare that to the last 3 years, in 2022, it's about 91, 85, and 94%. So you're down a little bit, but still you're at the top end compared to similar municipalities and basically double, triple of what the state requires for municipalities.
Can I ask a question about that?
Yes, sir.
Arlen, was that because of the transfers for stormwater? Or were there other issues?
It's a bunch of things.
Okay.
But all capital projects, the Public Works building came into play with some of that.
Okay.
And the stormwater projects that we did.
Perfect. So. Okay. Thank you.
For your water and sewer funds, you know, the things that they kind of look at for comparison is your quick ratio, and that's basically how liquid the town is, comparing your total assets versus, or your current assets versus your current liabilities. And that quick ratio of liquidity is basically, do you have enough current assets to pay the current liabilities as they come due and stuff. If you look at the minimum benchmark, is basically they want a 1-to-1 ratio. And so looking here for you, the quick ratio for the town for Curry Beach is it's been growing, so it's about 8.3 to 8 to 1 in 2023. 10-to-1 in 2024, and it's up to about almost 13-to-1. The operating net income, excluding depreciation and principal payments, so this is basically the money available to make debt service payments as well as replenish your capital assets. That can't be greater, you know, it has to be greater than zero. And you can see that for the past 3 years, you met that requirement. And then the unrestricted cash to total expenditures, similar to the fund balance to expenditure, is a greater than 16%. And you can see that you greatly exceed those for the last 3 years. So that just lets you know that your water sewer fund is very healthy compared to requirements. Now here's the net position of the town, and as you can see for the last 3 years, it has been growing because you've had positive, your revenues exceeded your expenditures and stuff. The important thing here is that the top line item there, that is your, what we call the capital assets, basically your capital assets, less any related debt. You know, most municipalities, due to the amount of capital assets required to perform the services and stuff, that this does make a large portion. Here, the governmental activities is, and this, you gotta excuse me because my eyesight's getting low.
Fair enough.
Here you're looking at the important line item here is that unrestricted, which is the top layer of the green. And it's been, you know, it's been about $3.5 million. Last year was about $4 million. And it's back down to about 3.2, but still, that's a strong balance. The restricted column has been growing, but a lot of that is the state statute requirements. And the state statute has a special calculation that all municipalities have to go through. And it looks at, it again, it kind of looks at that liquidity of the municipality for their general fund and governmental funds. And that can fluctuate depending on the collections of receivables and stuff. So it factors in your property tax receivables as well as any receivables related to the government and stuff. So that can go up or down depending on the collectability of those receivables. And then the last one is that capital asset that we talked about. And, you know, due to the capital projects you've had over the last 3 years, you know, that's going from about, you know, up a little over $9 million to a little over $13 million. So. Now here's the business type activities. This is basically your water and sewer fund. And again, looking at this, your unrestricted, again, that's what you want to focus on. It's about 3.3 million to 3.5 and now it's about 3.9. And so again, it's making a positive increase over the last 3 years, and that's what you want to see and stuff. Now here's the governmental funds, and it's basically, you see the general power, stormwater, beast protections, and capital projects, the fund balance. But the thing that, what you want to focus on is that unassigned. It's about, you know, 5.3. It did go up to 6 million last year, and it's down to about 5.8. But the assigned here, this is money that you set aside as a board to cover those projects. And that's not legally, you know, I don't want to say enforceable, but if you needed for some reason to use that money for something else other than what you've assigned it for, you can, as a board, can reassign those funds. But the restricted items that we talked about, and you can see the largest one in the state statute, and you know that was a little over 600,000, about 650,000 last year, and it jumped up to 800,000, and primarily, again, that's just receivables that haven't been collected prior to June 30th, but were subsequently collected after your hand, so it's not a collectability issue. And looking at the budget versus the actual, you know, the things you want to focus on is we talked about earlier, when you did original budget or your final budget, you budgeted about a $1.4 million fund balance appropriation to balance the budget that meant your expenditures exceeded your projected revenues. However, if you look at the actual results, your actual revenues came in about almost $300,000 higher than what you budgeted, but your expenditures were about $1.1 million less than what you projected. Basically come down to the, if you kind of look at for the year, it was a negative net change of 74, but still, you know, kind of almost break even if you kind of look at it total. And this is your water and sewer, and again, kind of what we talked about is looking at your revenues and expenditures. You had operating income of about almost $54,000. Your non-operating revenues and stuff or your investments or could be grants and things like that, but still had about a little over $350,000 positive change there. So still, you know, a good number for your water and sewer. Any questions?
Questions, guys?
No.
Pretty straightforward, pretty simple.
Straightforward and simple, yes.
We appreciate the job y'all do for us.
No problem. Always good to see y'all.
Okay, good to see you, Vic. Thank you.
I'd just say a good congratulations to Arlen and the staff.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Nice job.
Okay, the 2050 plan for the MTP presentation. And I think Mandy's pulling that up.
Good evening, Mayor and Commissioner. Thank you so much. much for the opportunity to present to you this evening. The slides say otherwise, but I am Greer Templer. I'm the Senior Transportation Planner with the WMPO, and so I'm here today to talk about the WMPO's newly adopted Metropolitan Transportation Plan, Cape Fear Navigator Exchange 2050, and so this document is, it serves as our region's long-range vision for transportation for the next 25 years. And so just to give a quick overview of what we're going to be looking at today, I'm going to talk a little bit about what the MPO is and what our federal requirements are, as well as just overviewing what an MTP is in our development process, getting more into the meat and potatoes of what our 2050 planning document is and how we develop that, and then finally, how to support the MTP and how it can support locally. The WPO was founded in about 1973 when our region contained 50,000 people, so we are in charge of designating how federal dollars are distributed throughout the region for transportation specifically. And so to date, we serve about a population of 300,000. I'd say closer to 350 to 400 these days, but we cover a planning area of roughly 494 square miles. So this includes all of New Hanover County and its municipalities, so the city of Wilmington, Wrightsville Beach, Curry Beach, Carolina Beach, as well as parts of Brunswick County, Belleville, Leland, Devasta, and a little bit of unincorporated, and then the lower portion of Pender County, so up to Highway 210 and a good chunk of the Hampstead area. And so our policy and guidance is set by a 13-member board, which includes a representative from each one of our member jurisdictions, with a caveat that there is two from the city of Wilmington, and there is a New Hanover County commissioner who serves as the Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority representative, and one person appointed by the North Carolina Board of Transportation, so that's the only non-elected person who is on our board. And so we do have some federal requirements tasked with us as we oversee regional transportation, and so a big part of that is to abide by the 3 C's planning process. And so what this means is continuing, so over a scale of time, cooperative, so making sure that we're working with our partners, and comprehensive, so thinking thoroughly about our transportation needs beyond just one single mode. We are also tasked with updating and maintaining a metropolitan transportation plan. What I said earlier, over the next 25 years, what I mean by that is our current plan looks out 25 years, and then in 5 more years, we'll be working on another plan that shifts up 5 more years. So for context, 2025 just adopted our 2050 plan, so come 2030, we'll be looking at 2055. So this is a continuing process, not just this is what 25 years looks like. We're also required to prepare an annual plan, so our work plan, and we assist in the prioritization of projects for the state MPO Transportation Improvement Plan, commonly referred to as the STIP, but this is the statewide process to move forward with funding at the statewide level. We also coordinate activities of the WPO board and our technical coordinating committee, which is composed of staff from our member jurisdictions. And so just to kind of touch on this already, but our current plan, Cape Fear Navigating Change, was adopted by our board on October 29th of 2025, and then it'll be due for that update by October 29th of 2030. And so some of the requirements of this plan are that it has to be multimodal. So the 6 modes that we look at are aviation, bicycle and pedestrian, ferry and water transportation, so that would be thinking of ferry systems and anything that might kind of edge on that in terms of passenger, rail, public transportation, and roadway. And so we are required to have a minimum of a 20-year planning horizon, but we actually work to a 25-year horizon. So looking at an extra 5 years, we have to adhere to a public participation plan, so this is something that we vet through our WPO board, it's available on our website, and then we also must make sure that we're using growth forecasts consistent with local land use plans, so that's a big thing. We make sure to work with our members to have an accurate idea of what growth may look like in the future and how that's kind of laid out within a land use plan. So making sure to hold that and move that forward and continue to be an advocate for that. And so just to kind of give you a quick dive of our timeline, so staff began working on this in 2022. This was kind of just behind the scenes preparation, kind of getting everything teed up. We actually did 90% of this work in-house. The only time we brought in some external parties was to help us with our financial element, just to make sure that was completely unbiased, and we had our best subject matter experts, but everything else you'll see was done by WMPO staff in-house. And so gearing up for that was really just getting ready to hit the ground running with our first phase of public outreach. And so we convened a citizens advisory committee, which was local citizens that were appointed by our board members to help us make sure that we were getting to the people and meeting them where they're at. So you're as a local, you live in your community, where should we go to make sure that we're hearing people, that our plan is being heard, and that the chances to provide comments are available to everyone. And we also had an MTPC, the Metropolitan Transportation Plan Technical Steering Committee. And so this group was composed of subject matter experts in transportation planning, urban planning, public health, emergency management, engineering, et cetera. So largely that technical staff from our member jurisdictions, but we also have representatives from NCDOT as well as the Port of Wilmington. So really, and anybody who was a subject matter expert in making sure we were looking holistically at the development of this plan. Between 2024, we really worked hard on developing the vision, goals, and objectives, starting to work towards global project development, hit the ground running with a draft plan development timeframe of December to May of this year, and then come this June was when we released our plan for draft comment. And then we had about a month where we were collecting more comments, making sure that we took everything into account, finalized that in the late summer, and then we brought it to our board for adoption in October. And just to show you a little bit more graphically what this looked like, so you know, looking at existing conditions, identifying projects, working through the financial element of it, and then making sure to have those touch points with our the public all through office, because ultimately that guides a lot of the work that we do along with the input of our member jurisdictions. And so with the first phase of public outreach, this was really our, if you could, what would transportation look like in 25 years if you could have anything that you'd like? And so we were able to convene our CAC four times. We held six public meetings. We did six stakeholder interviews with places like the Cape Fear Collective, the university, making sure there were anybody that may have different needs, and we're addressing those as well. We presented to our member jurisdiction board, so we did 13 presentations, and then 16 outreach events. So this was really pop-up style events, trying to meet people where they're at and making it easy for someone to come and give their comments. And so we were very successful in that first round. We collected 96 comments in person. We had over 2,300 survey responses total, with about 3,200 map comments, and then close to 6,000 map pins themselves talking about like location-specific needs. And so what we heard from our first round was that currently, right now, people are mostly driving alone, and then that their current travel priorities are safety, cost, convenience, and travel time. But when we kind of start shifting out, looking to that future horizon, we saw that people would prefer to walk, bike, and use public transportation more than just a single-use vehicle, their personal car, as well as safety stayed pretty consistent in terms of priorities, but wanting to address, again, congestion, and then having more options for multimodal transportation, so public transportation and bicycle pedestrian. And so as a part of this, we developed our vision. And so where that came from was what we heard from the public, the mission and visions of the WMPO, as well as a SWOT analysis done by the MTPC. And this stands for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. So kind of thinking systemically, doing a little bit of vision boarding, and seeing what that kind of, how that would shape our plan. And so from that, we developed our mission statement. Our region will thrive and prosper through a fair and resilient transportation network that supports regional economic vitality while improving quality of life for residents and enhancing quality of place for neighborhoods. From there, we moved on to goals development. So once we developed that vision, we took that, the WPO strategic plan and our federal planning factors to come up with our goals. And so these were weighed against each of our modes, aside from aviation, which I'll get to in a second, but this is how we kind of helped build out the policy and scoring criteria moving forward. And so what five goals we determined were safe, fair, connected, resilient, and that kind of takes a multifaceted. Resilient was a little bit more than just thinking of your resiliency to climate stressors, but also IT. So making sure that our cyber networks or anything that might be talking about intelligent transportation systems was accounted for as well, and then proactive. So trying to think ahead and not being so reactive to circumstances and being a little forward thinking, so to speak. So here you can see how the vision goals and our objectives, which is what success is defined as per mode, because I don't think it's safe to say what is success for bicycle pedestrian would not be the same as what success would be for passenger rail or so forth. So taking that, splitting it by mode, and then from there fracturing off a little bit more to develop the scoring criteria for each project based off of those five goals and our policies. And so when the time came, we reached out to our member jurisdictions and we collected information of their priority projects. So each project that was submitted to us for inclusion in our MTP came from our members and our planning partners. And so we focused on bike ped, ferry and water, public transportation, rail and roadway. This is because aviation, specifically Wilmington International Airport, has access to capital funds that traditional transportation infrastructure does not necessarily have access to, so they're able to escalate their projects at a much quicker time scale than traditional roadway projects and so forth. So they have a little bit more available to them in terms of grant opportunities, capital funds, things like that. So they said, we're good, and we said, cool, we'll echo out whatever you need to, but focus on our other modes where we know we have to work more towards competitive funding sources. And so we developed cost estimates based on all the projects submitted to us, and this was done with $2024 dollars and with the assistance of our financial consultants, Kimley Horn and Associates. From there, we were able to look at our historical funding sources, the traditional funding sources, through the year 2050. So we looked specifically at capital funding, and then we also looked at operations and maintenance funding, because for certain modes of transportation, they kind of interconnect a little bit, but overall, between now and 2024, I should say, we're expecting about $6 billion in capital funds and $1.4 in funds. And again, this is just traditional revenues. We did not look into operations and maintenance for aviation, again, because they have their own financial arm. And then for rail, because we do not have any passenger rail in our region. It's all private operations currently. And so from there, we began to develop our fiscal constraint for roadway projects and our red line analysis. So essentially what this means is getting our costs for each project by mode, looking at the historical funding sources that we know are available and funding projects that we know we have to be realistic with that, what we allocate for projects, kind of like playing, not Monopoly, so to speak, but what's available, what are our costs, what's available, and then the next step was looking at other opportunities to help escalate project timeframes. And so that is how we begin digging into an alternative funding analysis. And so I apologize for the text being a little bit small, but as you can see, we, just for roadway alone, based off of our needs and the projects submitted to us, we are looking at a $7.9 billion deficit. And that is just based off of traditionally available funds for this type of project specifically. And so with that deficit in mind, we, along with the support of our board, began looking into some different alternative funding mechanisms. So stuff like quarter cent sales tax, and this is a quarter of a cent, not a quarter. Transit specifically, vehicle registration fees, motor vehicle license tax, short-term vehicle rental tax, and then transportation bonds and tolling for a couple of projects. All of this was wrapped up into our draft plan, which we took back to the public in May of 2025. And so we had one meeting with our technical steering committee, two open houses, and five pop-up events. And so we garnered 57 comments from citizens and outside organizations, none of which resulted in any modifications to our project list. All of these comments were reported into a master spreadsheet, and you can actually find them in the plan document under Appendix C. So we made sure to every comment we heard, we responded to it within our planning document and made changes where appropriate. So most of them were related to formatting, you know, terminology, typos, mapping updates, etc. And so just to give you a quick overview of what you'll find in the document, so we have six main body chapters going from introduction, what is the MPO, what's the MTP, kind of the beginning of this presentation. Then we talk about our region, which is like existing conditions, what does our region look like today? And then how did we develop our plan? How did we identify priorities? How do our choices look by utilizing data products and public engagement? And then finally, what are those fiscally constrained priority projects and policies as well. You'll also find some appendices. This really holds a lot of our technical documentation. So this is where you find the nitty-gritty of the things. The main part of the planning document would be more of like the overview. And if you wanted to get into a little bit more of the minutia, the appendices would be where to check that out. And so the final document, it really just establishes our long-range vision, goals, and strategies for our regional transportation network through 2050. It identifies multimodal project priorities, including fiscally constrained roadway, and this is really teeing roadway projects up to go through the competitive STIP process, as well as guiding regional coordination and funding decisions. So it's a way that we're able to work together to make sure that roadway priorities specifically, but all transportation priorities that local jurisdictions may have, we're able to echo out and help get boots on the ground and funding secured. Some of these supporting projects, products within the plan include, we have transportation demand management, so we have a short-range plan there that's really looking to flip the trick, so to speak. So the TDM plan talks about how we can work to encourage people to utilize other forms of transportation rather than just a car. We also have a travel demand model, which is a data product, and that funding analysis. And so just to highlight a couple of the priority projects that we have here for you guys specifically, but this is not, this is what was submitted to us. Of course, there is a whole, we've got a good bit of projects and just wanted to highlight a couple of them. And then really just wanted to shout out the ways that this can kind of support your jurisdiction moving forward, you know, integrating it into development review, capital improvement program, and local transportation planning. We would also encourage, however you can, to participate and promote in our programs if we're ever knocking at your door, to make sure that we're being collaborative and able to echo out your opinions and making sure that we're advocating for you, and then reference it when possible, especially when thinking about what can go into NCDOT's transportation improvement program. And stay tuned, because we'll be back at this again in 2 to 3 years. And so with that, I just want to say a special thanks to everyone that helped. This was a very collaborative process and would not have been accomplished without the support and the input from our members. So this is a joint effort, and thank you to everyone who provided input. And then you can find the plan online at our website, www.wmpo.org/mtp. We are currently working through our official document printing process. So eventually, once it is completely shored up, we will have planning copies available. We will be bringing one to you all, and we will also have them available at area libraries. So with that, I know I just talked at y'all a good bit. So do you have any questions?
Well, that was a lot.
I know, it was a lot.
You can talk fast.
Sorry, y'all.
You did good.
Questions, Scott? Anybody have questions?
I have a question, because I noticed that safety was number one as a top travel priority and for future projects. And then also the number one and number two preferred mode of transportation was biking and pedestrian. Did you look at all how you reconcile e-bikes with safety?
Yes, so of course, as a government organization, we certainly cannot advocate. However, we do have a lobbyist that is working at the discretion of our board, and working, e-bikes are definitely something that we are hoping to provide a little bit more structure or encourage structure at the statewide level, so that there's some guidance that can help members be able to get a better grasp on how we can start thinking about this topic more and learning about it. It's difficult because enforcement is a part of it, and there's no definition at the statewide level in terms of like e-bike classes. So something that our lobbyist has been advocating for is even at minimum starting to get those definitions standardized at a statewide level. So, and we are currently working on a Safe Streets and Roads for All safety action plan. So we're doing that regionally with some recommendations that are going to be project and policy based, as well as working on a trail etiquette signage campaign. So we're trying to thread the needle of how can we start working on the behavior component, as well as trying to advocate as best we can for the more technical policy level part of that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, anything else?
Well,
thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Appreciate your time.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll move along to our committee business next. Bike Ped Advisory.
I'm following a great presentation by Greer. Thank you so much. And tonight I'll be really quick. Honorable Mayor Oliver and commissioners, first of all, I want to thank you for appointing the two new members to the Bike Ped Committee, Trent Taylor and Steve Corcoran. There were several other great applications, but we do keep those for one whole year. So anybody who had applied, you know, if there's another opening, that they will actually be saved to look at again in the future. But tonight, the main thing I wanted to tell you was to say congratulations to Yvonne Bailey and Murphy, her hardworking detective canine. They took first place in the Walktober event hosted by the Curry Beach Bike Head Committee. Walktober was created to inspire our community to get outside, enjoy the fresh air, and log miles for health, fun, and connection. Yvonne won a Be Seen, Be Safe shirt, and Murphy will get some dog treats. Next year, grab your sneakers, your neighbor, your dog, or your neighbor's dog, with permission, and hit the beach strand, roads, sidewalks, and trails. Walktober is Curry Beach's town-approved excuse to wander aimlessly, rack up miles, soak in the salty air, and casually compete with complete strangers, all in the name of community health. Way to go, Yvonne and Murphy. We did have, we used a Strava app, and I think next year it will be even better because many of us, this was such a learning curve to learn how to use Strava. All of my walking miles were logged as bike miles, so I guess I didn't really compete, but we're all learning how to use technology better. And thank you for helping us make Walktober a safer and more fun and healthier place to live in Curry Beach. Any questions?
Thank you, Mo. Community Center Committee, Nikki, any comment? Historic Preservation, anything tonight?
Yes, sir.
Marketing Committee, Mark, anything tonight?
Nothing.
Nothing tonight. Planning and Zoning Commission?
Yes, sir.
Nothing tonight. Shoreline Beach Access and Beach Protection, Dennis, anything from this?
No, nothing new.
Okay. Stormwater Committee?
No, sir.
Nothing. Okay. Wow. A committee. That might be a first. So, now on to Department Head Business. Administration, Mandy?
No, thanks.
Development and Compliance. Ah, we got somebody to come talk to.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I just wanted to give you guys a quick update on the CAMA application process for the LFALS. The application was submitted and received by DEQ a couple weeks ago. We are now in the public comment period. So there are notices posted on every access and LFAL location that we'll be working on. The Wilmington Office, Division of Coastal Management, will be receiving public comment until November 24th, which is next Monday. I'm hoping to get approved permit early next week, but with Thanksgiving coming, probably the week after that.
We're probably good. I think we're still good. The contract is with the attorney, so we're close, and then they got to order pipes, and we're 2 to 3 weeks out, so I think we're right on track. Nice job. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you, ma'am. Finance, Darwin, anything? Fire department. Police. Chief Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council. I'll try to make this as quick as possible. Since taking over as police, chief of police, I've been restructuring our police department, the patrol division, and the detective division, and I've got one final referral, and that is to request a change of the on-call formula that is in our administrative policy. That administrative formula is 0.62, and it's written for multiple departments within the town. By having one blanket standalone on-call formula, that limits the way our detective division can operate.
You want section 13, don't you?
So currently, I don't know if you can hear me, currently the way our detective division operates is we have two detectives. And detective one is in yellow, detective two is in blue. So as you can see, 1 week, one might work 3 days a week. The next week, that might work 4 days a week, then 2 days, and back to four. So what this does is it leaves huge gaps of time where that one detective may have a case that he is not able to work for 4 or 5 days in a row because he's off. Neither one of our detectives ever get to work together either when we had had these big cases come in. And I will say, all law enforcement action taken by Curry Beach Police Department is up 44% this year, over last year. Now, a lot of that is ending up in the detective division. By changing the on-call formula, if you can go to the next one. By changing the on-call formula, we'll have a be able to put together a different schedule, which is much more in line with, I would say, 99% of law enforcement agencies across the country, including Carolina Beach. Theirs is very similar to this. I didn't know this when I started this project, but found out theirs is almost identical to this. We can change the on-call formula. We can have the detectives working Monday through, well, Detective 1, Monday through Thursday, Detective 2, Tuesday through Friday. We don't have these large gaps of time off. The largest gap would be 3 days. Our detectives get 2 days of overlap to work together on these major cases. They can collaborate with one another. One of our other issues is I promoted Detective Kennedy to Lieutenant Kennedy. He will be coming out of that detective division, which means we've got to put a brand new detective in here. And if we keep them on that other schedule, they're going to be alone by themselves with no supervision. So I really want to get us to this point where they can work together at least 3 days a week to have supervision and to collaborate on these big cases. I've given you a handout earlier today, earlier this evening, that will give you some of the talking points. Currently, each detective only works 13 days a month with one on-call day where they sit at home and get paid. If we change it to this, they'll be working 16 days a month. It'll be 9-hour days versus 12-hour days, but those 9 hours will be 8 to 5 versus the 1 p.m. to 1 a.m. they're working now. And what that does is the 1 p.m. to 1 a.m., they lose half the day to deal with the courthouse, to deal with financial fraud cases, bank, businesses that are open 9 to 5. We've wasted time there. We're trying to get them more to a Monday through Friday, so to speak, so they can deal with the courthouse, they can deal with these financial crimes with the banks, you know, operating business hours. I think it's just going to be a more efficient way, and a more symmetrical way for us to operate as a police department. I think we'll get a lot more out of our detectives if we can make this change. You have any questions? So the formula is 0.114. I don't know if I mentioned that. That's the formula we came up with. And yeah, here we go. So everything above the highlighted point is what exists now in policy. The highlight portion is what I've recommended. All I did was just take the language that already exists and put our formula into it.
So what we want to do is add this section to the personnel policy, and if you guys approve it, I'll need a motion so I can amend the policy.
Okay. Arlen, no issues that you see from anything, right?
I mean, the financial, and there really isn't.
Right.
It's not a pay increase.
No, well, no, I was just making sure there's no weird state or federal law that applies to this. I don't think there is, but...
Yeah, we went forward. Yeah.
Okay, good. That's all I was asking, right? And your guys feel it's fair? It's impacting two of your guys? You've discussed...
It's going to be a much more desirable schedule.
So you've discussed it with them, and you don't see any issues from them, right?
I've had a hard time... Until I was proposing this change to them, I was having a hard time filling Ryan's spot because of the existing schedule.
And then, Jimmy, call and pay won't change for your guys, but you're not having any issues with that right now, right?
No.
No? Okay. It doesn't really apply, Ed, the way you're operating?
That's
cool. Okay. I don't have any questions.
Yeah, I have just one question. So what happens if you need detective on after 5 p.m.?
Well, they can still come out just like they would
on call.
If they needed to come out at 3 a.m., you know, if they went home at 1 a.m. and got called back out at 3 a.m., the formula change is not going to make an impact on how they're paid. It would all be the same. They would end up with overtime.
Okay.
But that would be it.
So if they actually come in, they get overtime. This is just a stand.
Yeah. Yeah. Standard.
This is if we didn't have overtime.
That's right.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have any more questions,
sir. Can we just go to the last slide? One more. So this is just an example of Detective King, what his timesheet would look like, and it didn't catch it all, unfortunately. I don't know why, but down here is supposed to say...
It does.
Anyway, they're supposed to get 168 hours a month, and he put that formula inputted throughout this timesheet, throughout this Excel spreadsheet cells. There's your 168 with that formula, so we come up with the hours we need.
Sounds like you've covered all the bases and
tried to.
I make a motion to modify the personnel policy to add the detective requested by the chief.
And a second.
I have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Comment? All in favor say aye.
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 Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Motion passes. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chief.
Public Works, anything, Jimmy?
I just had one update. A couple of big thank yous. First of all, Bolton Minks, I did receive the stormwater assessment estimate. Me and Commissioner Hager haven't been able to get to it and look at it, but we'll have it on next month's agenda. But I would like to thank everybody that was involved in the pre-bid and the bid openings and everything, Arlen, Commissioner Hagler, Mandy, and especially my favorite friend, Jim Elton, for making that process a little bit easier. And I also would like to thank Council for that special meeting and approving the contract. So we'll be moving forward once the contracts are signed, and hopefully it'll be an awesome project.
Contracts have been signed, an updated certificate of insurance has been presented, and I'll follow up after talking to Barlin on a little question regarding performance and payment bonds. So we're good to go. I've got a notice to proceed already signed by the mayor that I'll email to Unique tomorrow.
Excellent.
Great. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Jimmy.
They're saying they think about 3 weeks to get pipes. They can do some pre-work, so we expect them to start as soon as we get a camera permit, or the week after. So probably the first week in December.
And it looks like the schedule with the Corps of Engineers is going to work out well for us.
We're right on track.
So, Recreation, Nikki.
Discussing the new playground replacement at the Oceanfront Park, and with this process, we sought proposals from three different companies. We received five total proposals for different playground designs. We evaluated those playground proposals on criteria such as safety, age appropriateness, inclusivity and accessibility, play diversity, creativity and uniqueness of design, site suitability, timeline, experience, and budget. We chose the option that we believe will maximize inclusive play within the confines of a non-traditional space at Oceanfront Park in a budget-friendly manner. So our acquisition of the playground equipment and installation services is being done through Sourcewell, and they're a competitive bidding group purchasing program, and North Carolina General Statute 143-129E3 allows for acquisitions in this manner as an exception to the procurement requirements laid out in that same statute. So Attorney Eldridge put together the playground equipment purchase and installation agreement that's in the agenda this evening, and with council approval, and if we're able to execute this contract in the next few days, there's a high probability that installation of this new playground could be completed by the Polar Plunge in February. Weather permitting, that is.
This is demolition of the old
and
site prep and everything, right?
Lars was the only company that included demolition in their proposal, and it still came in at just over $30,000 under budget. So we budgeted $150,000 for this project.
Demolition and hauling away.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Any questions, anybody?
I don't have any questions.
I think we've done a good job on this. Mm-hmm. So, playgrounds aren't apples to apples. I think if Nikki found out that what one company sells, another company doesn't always have an equal. So you have to kind of look at different elements and what's best. And where this is, it's going to have a rubberized or a permanent cushioning, so it won't have the mulch down there. We have to continue to replace. Yeah, port in place is the word I was trying to get to. Thank you.
And we tried to stick with pirate ship theme that we had, but with this getting it installed properly to the right standards, the ship, there was a lot of wasted space.
Yeah. So I think this is going to be
coastal design.
I think this is going to be great. I think it's going to look good. As you see, it's got another sunshade over it and not the big one that we have down there now. So.
It also comes off.
Yeah. So, any questions?
No.
Entertain a motion to approve their...
Make a motion to approve the request for upgrading the Oceanfront Park outdoor ground.
Okay.
I'll second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nikki. The next item on the agenda is approval of the 2026 parking season. Mandy, if you can blow that, can you blow that up a little bit? We can all pull it upon. So basically what we did, we took the comments that we heard last month and incorporated into a final Curry Beach parking fee for 2026. The only major change is that under the seasonal permits is cutting that time down on the $100 thing. Everything else basically stayed the same on this part of it. Okay. Mandy, can we do two parts or do we need to talk about Nikki's proposal? You want to do it in two parts?
Yeah, I might do it in two parts.
Okay, so any questions or comments from council on this?
Oh, nice job. Make a motion we approve as presented.
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, great.
Make sure to remind your friends to go on early. Helping them out. They'll still tell us we didn't tell anybody.
No, no. All right, and Nikki, we may ask you to help discuss. I'll let you come back up. So go ahead, Nikki, and tell them how this came about and what you're proposing.
So this proposal is in response to requests we've received from special event permit applicants and those who wish to include parking for the participants, namely this golf tournament. Before getting into how the fee would be implemented, I want to illustrate the difference between the active and passive, because in case it's confusing, I'm going to use our holiday market that we're about to have this weekend as an example, because if someone else was trying to hold that event, it would have both active and passive in it. So Atlantic Avenue, where the vendors and food trucks and whatnot are set up, if someone else was trying to do that during paid parking season, that would be passive parking, because they're not actively parking in that spot, they're using it for event activities. So there's really no change to that. They would be charged of the full daily rate for any spot that we had to block off for them for their event activity.
As we would a movie.
A movie filming.
You know how they paid us. So
the active parking would be if they wanted, like we do for our vendors during the summer market, is we allow them to park on 6th Avenue for free. We give them a code because they're paying a fee to be involved in the event. So, since those are being actively used for participant parking, then we would charge them a discounted fee per space, depending on how many spaces they needed and for how long. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, the proposed new fee would be applicable to any special event held at any location throughout town, unless council wants to restrict it to just a specific location. If you wanted to say just Jody's Park events or whatnot. But as it's written right now, it's for any special event.
Mm-hmm.
It would only apply upon request to a special event held during paid parking season. Of the 10 permitted special events in 2025, this option for use would only apply to two of the 10. It would have been the skimboard competition, which the pier was heavily involved with that, and they had their own parking for that, so they weren't as concerned. And we had a disc golf tournament in June, which was one of the ones who asked for this. The other 8 events that were held were either outside of paid parking season or after hours, or the town voted to waive their paid parking for the day for the Disabled Sportsman's Fishing Tournament, or on 6th Avenue for one of the church events that the weather didn't cooperate with. But so out of those 10, it would have only been applicable to 2. The use would be implemented via coupon code. The special event permit holder would notify us if you on the application as well, but of the day and the time, and then the total number that they needed, then a fee covering those specifics will be added to their invoice they're already paying. Once paid, they would be issued a coupon code that would be good for 100% discount for a set number of uses on a set day for a set number of hours, and we can even set it to a certain area of town if we need to. The coupon code wouldn't guarantee a user any parking space. It only covers the fees once the space is acquired. It's the same process we currently utilize when we use coupon codes for other events. We used a percentage so that the fee would change with future parking fee changes. We wouldn't have to edit it every time. We felt 40% was a fair compromise that allows the town to still collect revenue, and recognizing that the event is paying additional fees as well as bringing visitors to the town who may spend money elsewhere. But if we find it's not working as intended, then we can always remove it from the fee schedule in the future.
And this gives Nikki the opportunity to, or the ability to make this without having to bring it back to us every single time. I think the disc golf, I think it's wise to say that the disc golf group, they get the 3 hours, but their events are basically all day long over there, so it solves that problem too. So, any questions for Nikki or comments?
The parking committee doesn't have any issues, just your coupon will fix it in their background, so that's the deal? Yeah. I don't have any. No.
Well, I trivial sort of comment though. You say 40% discount.
40% of the rate, so
60% discount. Yeah. Okay.
That would be $10 of for full day. Rate at current.
Okay. I was going to say, make it larger, but that's fine. You've done it. You've done it. I'm sorry.
Any questions?
Make a motion. Will you approve this modification to the special event fees for parking fee schedule?
A second.
Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes.
Nice job, Nikki.
Thank you, Nikki. I think that'll help out a lot right there. All right. Next item is under new business, and this is a discussion, and Pastor Andrew will ask him to come up to the podium too, and Mandy. Y'all want to give us, Mandy, you want to give us a little background on this, on the discussion for around Curie Beach First Baptist Church?
Yes. So, Pastor Andrew sends me requests from time to time on things. It could be a vacation Bible school request, or an event at the church, or a funeral, or things like that, and I would always bring them to council and get them approved. Then I got permission to approve, you know, certain events, and I do that without even coming to you guys. But he has a concern for the area of 6th Avenue between I and J. Mm-hmm. He wants to speak with you guys or discuss with you guys about the church paying for that parking so that he can use it as needed for his church event, and still leave it open to the public for parking. So I reached out to Premium Parking, and I worked with Jim to come up with the numbers for that area, and unfortunately, they're not able to drill down that far in their data to get just that section. So the numbers that I provided to you are for all of 6th Avenue.
Right.
And so, that's why.
I think that's a little bit out of his budget, what he planned on paying for parking, unfortunately. It was a great idea. It was a great concept. I think we just need to talk about, you know, I personally want us to, I think what the Baptist Church and Pastor Andrew is doing over there is serving our community well. I think you said you had, 70, 80 more programs you want to do? Something, what's the number?
There's several things that I would say, Mr. Mayor. Can I speak to the
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you very much for allowing me this time and allowing me to present this as some new business for your consideration. And I do want to say, first of all, I thank Mandy and the council for your accommodating us every time we've requested it. You've never denied us, and we really appreciate that. And you might ask the question, why is it that a church and community feels that they should have the right to be able to ask the town to waive the parking fee or to at least allow us to pay I don't want to pay what the fee would be, what the income would be if every parking space was taken every day through the whole season. Right. That's not what I'm asking for. What I am asking for is, and I got a pretty good idea how much money you guys are actually making off of 6th Avenue between I and J, which isn't a whole lot, I can tell you that, because there's not very many people that park there, because I live on that street, and I see who parks there in terms of going to the beach and so on, apart from the people who use that area to park for our church. Part of the reason why I'm asking this is because the ministry opportunities for our church are increasing all the time. This coming summer, we're planning on offering to the community 4 weeks of day camp that will run from early in the morning until dinner time in the evening. Families will be able to put 50 kids a week into that. And if that is successful, we would like to expand that to a full 8 weeks the following summer. We believe that we serve the community. Furthermore, part of the justification that I would offer to you in terms of your consideration of this is that historically the reason why church communities are given tax exemption in terms of its place in society is because society has always viewed religious organizations as a benefit not just to the members of that church but to the entire community. And I would strongly make the case that Curry Beach First Baptist Church makes living in Curry Beach a better place because of what we offer to the community. And I'm not talking just about the religious services that we offer, but I believe that the facilities that we have on 6th Avenue South are some of the best facilities that can be offered in the entire island. Back a couple of years ago, I had the Recreation Department come in and take a tour of it, and they've been very kind on our behalf to recommend to other organizations and businesses even that we're looking for a place to be able to hold events to use our facilities. And so right now, the Red Cross regularly does blood drives in there. Starting this winter, the New Hanover County Seniors Department, I'm sure the council that runs the Carolina Beach Senior Center, they're going to be using our facilities for one of their programs throughout the winter. You talk about the disc golf. The disc golf, we've worked out arrangements with them that every time that there's a disc golf tournament there, they use our facilities for their meals and for restrooms. We make our property available for them. In addition to the programming that we run ourselves and that we want to be able to run in the future. And so, without a doubt, and we want to do more of that kind of thing in the future. So I do believe that what we offer to the community is a benefit to the community. So to be clear in terms of what I'm requesting is I would ask the question of the council, if you can determine what you think the town of Curry Beach is actually making off of paid parking in that section in a season. And I don't mean what's being charged to people or what are being given out in tickets in that area. I'm just talking about how much money is coming into the coffers of that. We would be willing to talk to you about what would be a fair and negotiated price that our church would pay to the town. I'm not asking the town, and I'm not asking the citizens of Curry Beach to forego any of the revenue that you would receive because of paid parking. I just don't think you get that much in our area. And it does prohibit people from benefiting from the services and the ministries that our church offers if they have the concern that they're going to get a parking ticket, and if they're out of our jurisdiction or our town, they don't have a parking pass, that they're going to get a parking ticket by just parking there. Furthermore, when our church received that property that we have on 6th Avenue, the design of our building was with the idea that parking would be on 6th Avenue in the median between the north, the east and the west lanes, north and south lanes. And so we depend upon that parking for the effective operations of the programming and ministry that we have. We depend upon that. And so I'm asking the town, will you work with us? We are willing to give something. Will you make that reasonable for us to be able to do that?
I'm speaking for myself. I'd like for us all to sit down, some of us to sit down and have a deeper conversation on it.
I would be happy to.
And I think we can work something out, and we'll bring it back to council for approval.
Yes.
I'd like to work on that, too. So yeah. I agree with the pastor. 6th Avenue between I and J, And I think, Pastor, it would be good if you like figured out the times you really want. Because right now we already have an exemption Sunday 8 to 1. If your time frame worked, the council could expand that easily and figure it out. But I'll offer up as the second person, if unless Dennis really wants to, that you and I will meet with the pastor to talk about it and bring it back to the next meeting.
I'd be happy to do that.
Does that work?
That work for everybody?
Yeah.
How many spots are located there?
I don't know. I tell you what we'll do. We'll do a whole.
There's around 60, 70 spots.
Right.
We'll look at it. We'll talk about it. We'll come up with something. I personally appreciate what the church does for our community. Y'all have never, you helped Nikki and Sean out with the programs that, we had serving popcorn or hot chocolate. Mm-hmm. They even tried to wrap presents in the wind down there one year at the holiday market, but we found out there's a lot of things y'all do for us that people don't, and you've always been very accommodating to help us out.
And we've been happy to do that, Mr. Mayor. And
I know.
We appreciate the opportunity to work with the Recreation Department.
Yeah.
We had our fall festival a few weeks ago, and we had 800 visitors on our property, and people came from as far away as Brunswick County just to come down for our fall festival. So we were bringing traffic into Curry Beach because of the things that we did. Now, I realize that's out of the window of paid parking, but those are the kinds of things that we want to be able to bring to this community, and we want to see that increase. We still want the parking situation to become a barrier or a hindrance to the growth of those things. And I believe that at the end of the day, if we can work out an agreement to do this, I believe that not only the town council, but I believe the citizens of Curry Beach will say, that was a smart thing to do, because it allows this group to be able to do more, to be able to serve our community.
All right. David and I will get with you, and we'll sit down, and we'll bring a proposal back to council.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate you being here. Okay, so we got that. David and I are going to work with that, and Mandy and Pastor Andrew. Okay, next is the mayor updates. I'm going to cancel coffee with the mayor for November because of the Thanksgiving holiday. And then in December, plan on moving it up a week to December 20th. Just a reminder that next month is our swearing in for our two new commissioners and myself, and we will look forward to that. That'll be just a night of we'll celebrate our two commissioners that are leaving us and thanking them, and then doing the swearing in. So, Mandy, anything else on that? We need to.
I just need very little business.
Yeah, very little business that night. So we're going to try to put everything over to January from there. Okay. So, okay. Commissioner items, Dennis?
I have.
David?
Well, just thank you to Nikki and the Recreation Department for the food drive. And if you didn't donate, please donate food for our citizens that may need it. So appreciate that.
And please don't bring us expired
stuff.
Food.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
That shouldn't have to be said, but there you go. Thank you for saying it.
Well, we had another big load dropped in our lobby today, and that was all expired.
All expired?
So we're having to go through the stuff.
You
had to
throw away over 300 cans of expired.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
People got some pantries that haven't been cleaned out in a while.
That's right.
But we've also had a very generous outpouring of support for it. I didn't want to say that.
So deadline is when again?
It's going to run through December 19th. We're going to deliver the first round.
Okay, I need to remember to get you something. John, anything?
Catch you next month.
Huh?
Catch you next month.
Yeah, a countdown on single. Connie, anything?
No updates.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion for us to go into closed session.
Make a motion to go into closed session for attorney-client privilege per North Carolina General Statute 143, 318.11a3.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay.